Megan hasn't allowed her heart condition to limit her life. I think if anything, it has made her more determined to succeed at whatever she does, whatever she sets her mind to.
Welcome to Heart with Anna. I am Anna Jaworski. My son, Alexander, was born in 1994 with a single ventricle heart. He is my inspiration and the reason I am the host of your program. Today's program is CHD in the 1980s, Mom, Dad, and Daughter, featuring scriptwriting volunteer Megan Tones, who some of you loyal listeners might know, and her parents, Donna and Ian Leadbeater. We'll start today's program by learning a bit about Donna and Ian's early journey as heart parents. Then we'll talk to Megan, and finally we'll talk to all three of them together. Donna and Ian were born in Brisbane, Australia in the 1950s. They met in the early 1980s and married in 1982. Megan was born in February of 1983. All was going well for the new family until Megan became unwell at 6 days of age. Megan made her first ambulance trip to the pediatric cardiology unit at Prince Charles Hospital. With her parents by her side, Megan spent the first 4 months of her life in the hospital, where she had a pulmonary banding operation and finally became strong enough to go home. Megan had two more surgeries as a child at age 5 and 10, and one surgery at age 25. Today, Donna is very active in her local church and the Sewing Guild, and Ian plays drums in several local bands. Megan has been on several Heart to Heart with Anna episodes over the years. First, we'll talk to Donna and Ian about Megan's early days. Then we'll talk to them about Megan's school days. And finally, we'll talk to them about life today. Welcome to Heart with Anna, Donna and Ian.
Thank you, Anna. We're very happy to be here.
Thanks, Anna. No, it's a great opportunity to shed a bit of light on how things were back then.
Oh, I can't wait to talk to you about this. It's amazing to me how, even though we had children in different decades, I know that our stories are going to overlap in some ways. We'll definitely have some things in common. Donna, can you tell us about when you and Ian found out about Megan's heart defect?
Well, I noticed when Megan was a few days old and she was feeding, she seemed to be becoming very tired. Then she developed a little cough, and I knew something wasn't right. They weighed her the day before I was to take her home, and she had exceeded her birth weight. And I thought, well, that's really strange, because she's not feeding well. How can this be happening? So the obstetrician checked her over, and I could tell by the look on his face that there was something wrong. He told me that he'd heard a heart murmur, and he called in a pediatrician to examine her. And then we were sent for a barrage of tests, ending up with the ambulance trip to the Prince Charles Hospital. And that night she had an emergency cardiac catheter, and the cardiologist told us that she, the problem that she had with her ventricles. So it was a very long day and very stressful.
Indeed, indeed. Now, Donna, were you able to ride in the ambulance with Megan?
Yes, I was. So it wasn't quite the trip home with my new baby, though I had anticipated.
No, it wasn't. I was able to ride with my son in the ambulance from the hospital where he was first diagnosed with having a problem until we made it to the hospital where he actually had his surgery. And it was surreal for me. Mm. Did you feel that way too?
Oh, I did. And also, I think as a mother, you have that protective instinct really kicks in. You know, when there's something terribly wrong like that, you just want to be able to hold your baby. You don't want to let them out of your sight. So, I was glad that I could go with her and be with her through that whole experience.
I found out later they were worried he was going to crash. And so we actually had a doctor who rode with us, and I was so ignorant. I didn't know that doctors didn't always accompany babies to the hospital.
No. Well, there's so much going through your mind at that time as well. It's a lot to take in. I thought I had a healthy little baby girl, and we were almost due to take her home. And so it's a lot to take in that your child has this serious problem. And, it's the beginning of the whole journey, isn't it? That of surgeries, and it's just an awful lot to take in initially.
So Megan was your second child. Alexander was my second child as well. And the advantage there is we were not brand new mothers. We did have that maternal instinct that let us know that something was wrong. I knew from day one that something was wrong, but they kept telling me not to compare Alexander to Joseph. Did you know before you were supposed to go home, or did you suspect that something might be wrong?
I suspected something was not right when she wasn't feeding well, when she was tiring and had that little cough. And later the nurses told me that 99% of the time, if mothers say there is something not right, something is not right. It's that mother's intuition kicks in.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Ian, Megan was in the hospital for the first few months of her life. That's a long time. What did the doctors tell you about her condition?
We were very fortunate. The hospital is a specialist cardiac hospital with lots of expertise, but they told us in layman's terms what Megan's issues were. Her cardiologist and surgeon, they were both very, very experienced, and they just told us about the septum had started to form, but for some reason stopped. Whether John may have had a virus or something, but they likened it to a plant. Some thrive, some don't. Fortunately, they had the expertise to work out quite possibly a Jacqueline patch that would take the place of a septum. The anatomy of the heart was very, very different. So there was quite a degree of risk with the electrical pathways. Had they been disturbed, it would have been very, very problematic. But that didn't occur. So it was a case of all's well that ends well. They also had the procedure worked out fairly early on with a band around the pulmonary artery, and then after that had settled down and the heart function became more normal, they would then try the patch. We had the feeling that they were pretty much always in control, barring the unforeseen, of course.
Wow, they really explained a lot to you then, and you were able to very well understand what they needed to do to Megan.
They were very, very clear in their explanation, and obviously we were both very, very focused on what was likely to happen.
What changes did you notice in Megan after she had that pulmonary banding?
It was wonderful. Pink fingers instead of fingernails rather than the bluish tinge. The lips were more pink rather than blue, and Megan seemed to have quite a lot more energy and just be a much happier little bub.
Now, Donna, did you notice that she started to feed better?
Yes, well, that would have been around 4 months. She did start to feed better and just gradually start to put on a little bit of weight. I think she was only about 9 pounds, only a couple of pounds above her birth weight. So she had grown in length, but she was a very slim little baby.
She's still a slim little baby.
She's adorable. Well, today many parents have support groups in the CHD community, but there was nothing like that when our children were born. What support did you find most helpful when Megan was a baby?
First of all, we had a great surgeon. We were very lucky, Dr. Mark O'Brien, and he said a couple of really encouraging things to us. I'll always remember when we first took Megan as a little baby, he said, "Megan is here for a purpose." He obviously had quite a strong faith, but it was just really encouraging to hear those words, and unusual to hear that from a surgeon.
Yes.
But he also said to us, "Don't spoil her." I suppose he saw parents who tried to wrap their children in cotton wool because they had this heart condition. So we always encouraged her to, to have a go at things and take part in school activities. And I think that certainly helped her along the way as a child. But getting back to when she was a baby, there was a wonderful matron, Sister Morris, who had a lot of experience, an older lady, and she was just extremely capable and she inspired great confidence. She was the head of the children's pediatric ward at the hospital there. And we just knew when she was there, Megan was receiving the best possible care. She gave great advice with, you know, with feeding and just that sense that everything would be okay.
And she was scary at first.
Very much in control. And I must mention the other nursing staff were supportive. But apart from that, there were no support groups for parents. But a friend of my sister-in-law knew of someone who had this lady who'd had a little boy who was born with CHD, and she gave me her phone number. So I got in touch with her, and it was just wonderful to speak to someone else who had been through the same experience. And her little boy was at school at that stage, so that just gave me hope. Yes, we can get through this, and yes, Megan will go to school. And it was very encouraging to speak to someone else who was just a bit further down the track.
Home Tonight Forever by the Baby Blues Sound Collective.
I think what I love so much about this CD is that some of the songs were inspired by the patients.
Many listeners will understand many of the different songs and what they've been inspired by. Our new album will be available on iTunes, Amazon.com, Spotify.
I love the fact that the proceeds from this CD are actually going to help those with congenital heart defects.
Enjoy the music.
Home Tonight Forever.
This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The opinions expressed in the podcast are not those of Hearts Unite the Globe, but of the hosts and guests, and are intended to spark discussion about issues pertaining to congenital heart disease or bereavement.
You are listening to Heart to Heart with Anna. If you have a question or comment that you would like addressed on our show, please send an email to Anna Jaworski at anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. That's anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. Now, back to Heart with Anna.
Welcome back to Heart to Heart with Anna, Megan.
Oh, thanks, Anna. It's wonderful to be back again.
I can't believe it's been so long since I've had you on the program, and I'm so lucky to have both your mother and your father with you. This is really fun.
Yeah, it's been great.
This is a really different program for you, isn't it?
Certainly is. And it's been really fun to take this little trip down memory lane and also to show Mum and Dad a bit of what I do with Heart to Heart with Anna. So
absolutely. Well, for those people who would like to hear more of Megan's story, I am going to put links to Megan's other episodes in the show notes. And folks, for those of you who are listening, the show notes are the description of the show. And so you can access that when you're not driving or exercising or whatever it is that you're doing while you're listening to this program. So that'll be in the show notes. This was really fascinating, Megan, to actually talk to your parents about your heart defect and what it was like for them when you were first diagnosed. We've never really talked about your family life as a big sister. Why don't you tell me about your siblings?
Yes, I'm actually a middle child, Anna. So I've got a brother, Michael, who's 4 years older than me, and a younger brother, Stephen, who is 8 years younger.
Wow, and that's a big spread.
But we all love to play video games together growing up. So
there you
go. We've had just about every video game system known to man. So I remember when I was a little girl, we had the Atari and the old Nintendo Entertainment System.
Oh, darling, you are showing your age.
And even before that, I remember very young, this is one of my early memories, Michael had a dashboard, so it was like a little toy driving game, and we used to sit side by side while he'd play on the dashboard, and we'd pretend we were driving in the car together, and he'd always make it fun, like he'd be like, duck, we're gonna crash, or something like that.
And that sounds great.
Yeah, so, and then of course the Super Nintendo came along and Stephen came along.
roughly at around the same time, actually. So the three of us, we'd play Super Mario World and Donkey Kong and Mario Kart and Street Fighter, all those games that were really popular back then. And as we've gotten older, obviously our lives have taken us in different directions, but if you put a PlayStation or something down in front of us, we'd all play together.
And I'm sure that you all would become super competitive with each other, right?
We'd actually be more competitive with our cousins.
Well, Megan, many parents worry when they find out that their children are going to be born with a heart defect and require open heart surgery. And parents sometimes worry that their children are always going to be in the hospital or have a different quality of life than their heart healthy children. I was really impressed to hear your mother say that the surgeon said, don't treat her any differently. Tell me about what it was like growing up.
I think that probably it is quite common for people to treat sons and daughters differently regardless. I think most things that would be dangerous for a heart kid would be dangerous for other kids as well. I have a cousin who's about the same age as me, and one time we were over playing at his house, and for some reason we got the bright idea to crawl along the top of the fence, and it was about a 6-foot high fence.
Yikes.
And he fell off.
Oh no.
Fortunately, he was all right. But I mean, that's an example of something that's a bit dangerous or silly for anybody.
Apparently, you weren't too afraid to just do what your cousins did or your brothers did.
We played video games together. I was the only girl, so probably about the only thing that they did that I didn't was skateboarding. Mm-hmm. Not that I couldn't have skateboarded. I crashed into a wall. I could have made it onto CKY. I was that bad. But really, you know, stuff like riding bikes and things, I mean, I was a bit uncoordinated with sports and that kind of thing, but there were lots of other things we could do together. And I had a couple of friends at school, other girls, and their parents didn't let them have a Nintendo, so they used to love coming to my place to play it. And when I was a teenager, we had the pool, so I was like the coolest kid in school for
absolutely
a little while there, particularly in summer.
So do you think that since you had boy cousins and you had two brothers that you were kind of a tomboy?
Yeah, I would say so.
And yet here you are now. I know you love sewing.
Yeah.
And I often see you in dresses.
Yeah, I do wear them. They still fit. Even after lockdown.
Oh my gosh. So maybe you're not as much a tomboy now that you're older.
Still very pragmatic.
Yes and no. I mean, I lift weights. I play a guitar sometimes, but I also paint and sew and fuss over the dogs like they're little babies.
I do that too. Well, Megan, I know you're a very accomplished person. You have a PhD, you work at a university doing research, you're married to a great guy, and you're a fur mommy, like we were just talking about, to many sweet dogs who help us during our script writing sessions. Can you share with me what has been the greatest challenge in realizing your goals? And also an experience where you had to overcome one of those challenges?
Probably the biggest challenge growing up and being a young adult is just not really understanding my heart defect very well. Like, this is going back 20 years. And my cardiologist actually said to me when I was about 20 years old, you don't have to see me anymore. And I thought, well, that doesn't seem right. And I insisted on going back, but I feel like probably my heart condition was impacting me in ways that I didn't really understand. Like, I ended up seeing a psychologist for a while. And so I sort of had to do a lot of my own research to try and find resources that would help me. Mm-hmm. But in terms of overcoming challenges, probably one of the examples that I think is most important is that I married someone who was good with money. So now that I'm almost 40, I'm really grateful that we worked so hard to build up that sort of security, to have housing and things like that. And there's not so much financial pressure as there used to be when we were young. But having said that, there are some things about being an adult that I'm not very good at. Like, I still can't drive. I'm the worst driver. I probably would have run somebody over if I somehow got my license. I bought a smartphone and dropped it in a week. Well, actually, work gave it to me, so that was embarrassing.
Oh, no.
So there are all these things you just think, oh, you know, that person's not managing very well. But then there are other aspects where I feel like I've done quite well. And I think there's an element of finding out what things resonate and work for you. And, you know, sometimes people are going to look at you like you've got two heads, but if it works for you, why not? And you're not hurting anybody, obviously.
Right, right. Well, I think it's interesting that you shared with us that you saw a psychologist. Did you feel that that was something that helped you?
I think a little bit in just trying to understand like what was going on. I suppose directing me to look into those things more for myself and what things might help, because it is pretty difficult finding that sort of support and finding someone that you really gel with. So the person that I saw at the hospital was a lovely lady, but I felt like some of the strategies that she came up with for me were just kind of you know, like, but it did encourage me to look into those sort of things more. And I suppose I tried some things that helped, like getting more into art, take art classes now. I got back into writing some of my own stories again. Like, actually, one thing that was really good for me when I had my surgery when I was 25, it was such a horrible time. You know, I had a huge loan. I just got these new dogs that weren't really coping. So they just totally wrecked my wooden floors while I was in hospital.
Oh, no.
I was doing my PhD, but I had this short story accepted. And it was just such an exciting time for me to be sort of come home and go through the process of editing it with an editor. That was really fun. And then getting a copy of the book in the mail, all that was really good.
Anna Jaworski has written several books to empower the congenital heart defect or CHD community. These books can be found at Amazon.com or at her website, www.babyheartspress.com. Her bestseller is The Heart of a Mother, an anthology of stories written by women for women in the CHD community. Anna's other books, My Brother Needs an Operation, The Heart of a Father, and Hypoplastic Left Heart Syndrome, a handbook for parents, will help you understand that you are not alone. Visit babyheartspress.com to find out more.
Heart to Heart with Anna is a presentation of Hearts Unite the Globe and is part of the HUG Podcast Network. Hearts Unite the Globe is a nonprofit organization devoted to providing resources to the congenital heart defect community to uplift, empower, and enrich the lives of our community members. If you would like access to free resources pertaining to the CHD community, please visit our website at www.congenitalheartdefects.com for information about CHD, the hospitals that treat children with CHD, summer camps for CHD survivors, and much, much more.
So now it's time to have the whole family together. And this has been so much fun so far. I can't wait to see what we come up with when we're all together. But we're going to start with you, Donna. Can you share with me one of your fondest mother-daughter memories?
I suppose when I think back, that period before Megan went to school, we had wonderful time together making things. Megan's always been very creative. And I suppose because she wasn't an outdoors kind of little girl, she didn't run around a lot. She just loved painting and drawing, and she loved animals. And we had a collage cupboard where I kept all sorts of fabrics and scissors and tape and paints and things. And she used to like making little costumes and things. And because I'm a sewer, I really got into it with her. We used to have a lovely time and cooking together. We used to make cupcakes. And even now as an adult, we both go to the Sewing Guild together. Megan has, you know, she's continued with that, with her interest in sewing and making her own clothes. So we've had that wonderful creative interest together. And it was a very special time, I must say, that before she went to school, I really missed her when she went to school because we used to have so much fun together.
I know. It seems wrong in some ways that we send our children to school right when they're so much fun to be with.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It was funny when she was in kindy, they did for Mother's Day, they did a cookbook and they got the children to talk about their favorite recipe. And of course, they were hilarious, some of them, the children's interpretation of, you know, how to make whatever recipe. But Megan recited the recipe for cupcakes just perfectly. She remembered all of the ingredients and what she had to do. And at the end, she said, and then don't do anything else.
I love it. But I bet you surprised her teacher.
I suppose some of those other skills with her, like the fine motor skills with drawing and painting and even writing and reading, she developed that quite a lot early on. And I think that was because she wasn't so active in other ways. So her reading and writing and all of those skills really sort of developed a lot more in her early years.
Isn't it funny how when she and I were just talking a few minutes ago, those are the exact same activities that she talks about that helped her to cope with having that surgery. It almost makes you wonder if those early activities formed neural passages in her brain that were comforting to her because she she was with you. And that would have been very reassuring to a little girl, I'm sure.
I think so, Anna. And even at primary school, Megan used to love going to the library at lunchtime. You know, she didn't want to be running around so much outside. So that love of books and reading developed quite early on. And it's interesting that's ended up being the career path that she's taken. But
Ian, you only have one daughter. How difficult was it for you to let Megan date?
It was really no problem at all. And I don't want to sound blasé or anything, but Megan's always been very pragmatic, hardworking. By the time she got old enough to go on dates and so on, she was living a fairly normal life. She had good friends, and Megan herself has always had very sound judgment.
She seems like a very practical person. I can't imagine her being a rebellious teenager.
No, she was always very well adjusted, and I didn't really have any misgivings about anything that she wanted to do, because I knew she would have always looked out for herself as well as other people. So she was never a show-off or a rager, party girl. So no, I didn't have any problems at all.
Now, was it hard for you when she went off to university?
No, we were happy to see her go because she's been fairly bright. It was obviously the path for her. Mm-hmm. We're all quite avid readers, but Maisie has always been quite exceptional. My old mum was a school teacher, and Maisie's a bit like chip off the old block. Very, very practical, very smart, straight from the shoulder.
Well, Donna and Ian, I absolutely love your daughter. In case you can't tell, I adore her. She's one of my favorite volunteers, and I look forward to working with her every week. It's one of the highlights of my week. And I know just from talking to you today how proud you are of her. Can you tell me what brings you the most pride when it comes to your daughter?
Megan hasn't allowed her heart condition to limit her life. I think if anything, it has made her more determined to succeed at whatever she does, whatever she sets her mind to. She does research in her academic career, and I think that same analytical approach she has in managing her health. You know, she's very careful with her diet and exercise, and does whatever she can to maintain her health and have the best quality of life she can. She's determined not to miss out on anything in life. You did mention about her trip to Egypt. She asked her doctor if it was okay for her to travel overseas, and he said yes. You know, he gave her, you know, his approval to that. But I don't think he really thought she was going to be having 5 weeks in Egypt and camping out in the desert.
I know, right? I'm shocked that any doctor would say that was okay, but it sounds like maybe Megan didn't give him all the details.
No,
but once again, she did research it very well. Yes. And she had a very good guide. So that yes. same approach, yep. I want to do this and I'm going to make it work. So
right. Yes. That must be comforting to you that your daughter is such a good steward of her own health. She's like an ideal patient. I admire that she is willing to do things to challenge herself physically yes. and otherwise, but that she does take care of herself very well. Yes.
Yeah. Well, she does occasionally like come in, when we have family celebrations. I did have to say to her the other day, what did we have there? It was chocolate or something.
And I said, chocolate Wheatons.
Yeah. And I said, okay. I think you've had enough, Megan. So she does occasionally allow herself to have a treat. But for the most of the time, she's very sensible and careful. And you know, she and Matthew are both very careful with their diet and cook healthy food. They enjoy eating healthily. So,
but both of them are very, very smart and very, very pragmatic. They've got plenty of street sense.
Yeah, so she's got a good partner who supports her and with her, you know, maintaining her health.
That makes a huge difference when you know that there, and Megan's not by herself. You know that she has somebody there who always has her back. I think that must be a great comfort to you.
They're both extremely pragmatic. The big thing is, I think they always look on the bright side without being Pollyanna-ish, but they're realistic.
That was the feeling I had when I spoke with Matt. He was a delightful guest too. We had such a good time together. Well, Megan, you get to have the last word, darling. I hope we weren't too embarrassing with all of our praise on you.
No, not at all.
Parenting is one of the greatest challenges a person goes through. And we often don't know if we've done a good job or not until it's too late to do anything about it. Can you tell me one thing that each of your parents have done that made you feel special or cherished?
There are so many examples. I remember when I was a little kid, Dad used to come in and tell me stories at night, and he'd do that in hospital as well. So it'd make me feel like I was at home. And I think that's really important for a child in hospital to have some of those sorts of comforts at home. I always felt sorry for kids whose families live far away.
Yeah.
And they couldn't have both their parents with them. Mm-hmm. And I think Mum, like all the arts and crafts and fun things that we used to do, just that they both put so much effort into learning about me and supporting me, because obviously I wasn't the kid that they're expecting or that any parent would expect, you know, when they're going to have a baby, but they really worked very hard to look out for me and do the best for me. Like when I was a teenager and I had scoliosis, they got a pool, an above ground pool, which I'm sure was a big sacrifice for them. And not only did it mean I didn't have to wear my brace all the time, but I could have my friends over and play in the pool and stuff. So it was good for me socially at that time as well. And I think one other really good example was that they let me choose my own interests and encouraged me with them. Or they didn't used to say, oh no, you can't do that. 'Cause I've got a really good example of that. When I was a teenager, I thought I wanted to have a farm. Looking back on it, it was the most stupid idea ever. And I didn't even really have an understanding of what a farm was. I thought I'd just live in this nice place by myself and hang out with all the animals. So it was more like an animal sanctuary I was thinking of. But rather than say, oh, no, Megan, that's a really stupid idea, you couldn't do that, they took me to like this agricultural university open day so that I could see what it was like and what I would have to study. We went on a farm stay holiday so I could see what it was like getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my god!
Walking all around a farm and getting chased by cows.
But you like the pigs.
Yeah, I really liked the pigs for some reason. The piglets were so cute.
Oh my gosh.
The people had all these dogs and stuff. So it was a really fun holiday, but I did eventually realize that probably wasn't a good career option for me, which it wouldn't have been. But rather than just tell me, oh no, you can't do that, it's like, well, this is what it will probably be like, and this is what you'll have to know, which I think is a really good approach.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I
It
guess.
sounds like they were very respectful of you, Megan.
And pushing me to do things as well, I think to some extent is good, like having a choice in things, of course, but also getting that encouragement and push, which I think a lot of kids probably need, because things are hard work. You know, if you want to get good at something, it's hard work. But also, so I wouldn't get left out of stuff like sports days and things. I mean, I was rubbish at sports, but
me too. And I didn't have a heart defect to blame it on.
my parents didn't just keep me home and say, oh, no, you can't do that. At least I was able to at least go and be with my friends and stuff.
And
so
participate.
That kind of thing was good. And another big thing was I hated physical activity when I was a kid so much. I mean, I still don't like it much, but I see the benefits of it. We got a dog. My parents did not want a dog, and I did, and they got me one. I had to nag them for almost a year, but in the end, they loved the dog.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, it meant that I played outside and went for walks and made friends with other kids. People always come up to you when you've got a dog.
Absolutely.
And I made clothes for a little jacket, something.
I could just see you doing that, Megan. Did you have matching jackets with your dog?
I don't think so.
Not quite that bad.
Not quite that bad. Oh, it's so lovely to hear a young woman say such kind and loving things about her parents. I hope that has been something special for you, Donna and Ian.
Oh, it's been lovely to share. Yes.
Well, I have been wanting to meet you for years. So thank you so much for coming on the program, Donna and Ian. This has just been delightful.
Oh, it's been a great pleasure. And it's been wonderful to meet you and talk with you as well, Anna.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
So much.
Very, very good. Keep up the good work, and hopefully listeners can maybe get a little bit of insight. Well, they probably work it all out for themselves anyway, but it never hurts to have things confirmed or to hear other people's stories.
Absolutely. That is what can sustain us. Well, Megan, thank you so much for coming back on the program. I love having you on the show, and you know you're welcome anytime.
Thanks, Anna. I'd be happy to come back another time. I'm sure we can think of some ideas for shows, so that won't be a problem.
It's never a problem for the two of us, that's for sure. Well, that does conclude this episode of Heart to Heart with Anna. Thanks for listening today. Next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern time, we'll have another brand new episode. Until then, please visit us at heartsunitetheglobe.org. For information about congenital heart defects and our podcasts. And remember, my friends, you are not alone.
Thank you again for joining us this week. We hope you have been inspired and empowered to become an advocate for the congenital heart defect community. Heart to Heart with Anna, with your host Anna Jaworski, can be heard every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time.